You've done the quiz and now you know your partner's love language. And maybe you've been trying to do some things differently. Maybe give a bit more quality time, more words of affirmation, doing a bit more around the house as an act of service. But somehow something might still feel off. You're doing all of this work and doesn't seem quite enough. Here's what most people don't know. The research doesn't actually support the core claims of the five love languages, not in the way the book suggests it does. And in my therapy room, I see a lot of couples who are stuck because they're working within a framework that maybe wasn't quite right to begin with. I'm Reva Karkus, accredited mental health social worker and couples therapist, and welcome to This Complex Life. If you've done the five love languages quiz, you're not alone. Over 20 million copies of this book has been sold. I've even done the quiz, and when I first started out as a therapist, I'd even recommend it to clients to try as well. Today, I'm talking about what the love languages get right, what they get wrong, and what the research actually tells us about how to make someone feel genuinely loved. And some of what I cover today might feel a little counterintuitive, and that's okay. The book, The Five Love Languages by Gary Chapman, was one of the first relationship books I ever read. And I really loved it. It spoke to me. It felt like it made sense. This idea that there are different ways that we like to be loved, I thought was the key to unlocking a happy relationship. I could look at it and see some of the fights that people around me had. And I'm like, oh, that's because she likes acts of service and he likes words of affirmation and they're just missing each other. It felt really simple and life-changing. And if everybody just read it and did it and helped their partner with the things that show them love in a way that they like to be loved, it would be amazing, right? This book and the associated quiz of the five love languages is one of the most culturally embedded concepts in the last 30 years. There's good news and bad news. The good news is it opened up a conversation. It helps people put into words some of their needs, wants, and preferences and observe in their partner what can be helpful, a helpful way to show them that they're cared for and loved. The bad news is the research doesn't back the core claims that by speaking your partner's love language will guarantee relationship success. And if you're not familiar with the five love languages, it is a book and there's a quiz that you can answer all these questions and it tells you what your primary love language is. And that is the way that you essentially like to receive love. There are five categories that he identifies. There's words of affirmation, quality time, physical touch, acts of service, and gifts. And the idea is that you might have one primary love language and your partner might have another primary love language. And if you can speak each other's love language, things can greatly improve. It sounds simple, but clinically, it is a lot more complicated than that. Studies have found that having the same primary love language as your partner does not predict relationship satisfaction. If you both love giving gifts, that's not going to be enough to make a relationship work. And the thing is, I've noticed this in the couples that I work with and even in myself, we don't actually have just one dominant language. Most of us want all five, maybe with a preference over some than others. So we might want our partner to show gratitude and appreciation and affirm us and say nice things. We also might want them to pick up a little treat while they're at the supermarket because it's something they know that we like. We might also want them to take the car to the car wash and have it sparkling clean as an act of service. And we might also want to cuddle at the end of the day and have physical touch. And we might want to spend quality time with them on the weekend. Chances are we want all of those things at different times. And sometimes we might have a preference for one over the other, but just having the same shared love language as your partner doesn't guarantee relationship success. Chapman's hypothesis, so Gary Chapman, the author of this book, it was tested formally in the Journal of Marriage and Family Therapy, and it was not supported. Preferences aren't fixed. They shift with life stage, stress, having kids, and maybe even season of life. Here's what people get wrong when talking about the five love languages. What I see in my therapy room is people use it as some sort of compatibility test. Oh, he likes quality time. She likes acts of service. We're incompatible. And they treat it as a diagnosis rather than a starting point. And they might even search for partners based on this preference and use it as a quality control or a relationship litmus test. Another area that I see it go wrong is when people expect their partner to just automatically deliver love in your category, in your love language, and not have a conversation about it, not actually talk about what does that mean. All of those things really matter. Just simply saying acts of service, well, what does that mean? I like acts of service. Okay, what is that? Is that doing things that are extra hard tasks, like, oh, there's a crack in the ceiling, go and plaster that? Or is it simply cooking dinner? For someone else, that same act of cooking dinner might feel like, well, that's a non-negotiable. You've made me something extra special that I knew took a lot of time. That's amazing. For someone else, an act of service could be taking the dog for a walk and they know their partner's tired. Like, we don't have the same definitions of what those things are. So just using it as a diagnosis without a further conversation is a really unhelpful way of using this theory. Another way I see this goes wrong is people use it as some sort of measuring stick. I've done my love language. I know his love language or her love language. I'm doing it. Why isn't this working? Or why aren't they doing it for me? And it can become a bit of a tit for tat type thing of, I've done this for you because I know you like X, Y. And the other way I see this go poorly is, yes, we might have some preferences when we first start dating and we talk about it. But the thing is, those needs and preferences, they change over time. Just like everything else about us possibly changes. There might be food that you used to like that you no longer like. There might be exercises you could do easily when you first met that now really hurt your body. There might be people in your life that you were super close to that now you're not so close to. We change as humans and we need to update those love languages. We can't just think that they are set and forget. Like I said earlier, we usually want a combination of all of them. And so we need to keep updating that with our partner. We need to keep updating what we want, what we need, how we like to feel loved, and understand that for them as well. The big thing that actually matters more than the love languages is responsiveness. So if you read this book with your partner and you both do the quiz and it sparks a conversation, that's a good sign. Taking the time to invest in your relationship together is really great. If you're already fighting about doing the book and one person's like, well, I don't want to do it, that's crap, that's probably not such a great sign. So sometimes you can look at how you actually approach the conversation about the love languages, and that can be really telling in itself. Research consistently shows that responsiveness is one of the biggest predictors of relationship satisfaction. Now, these are sometimes called bids for connection. It shows up in two different ways. One is noticing what your partner needs in real time and responding to that. And the other is noticing when they try to connect with you through daily comments and interactions. Hundreds of those small moments over time matter far more than hitting one category consistently. If you have gone and bought your partner a gift because you're like, well, gifts is their love languages, and throughout the day there've been no positive interactions, maybe no hug or kiss goodbye, no hug or kiss when you've come home together, maybe no contact throughout the day, the house is messy and dirty and the dog hasn't been fed and the kids have to be dropped off somewhere and there are shoes at the end of the bed that you know is going to annoy them, but it's like, hey, I brought you a gift, you should feel loved. That's not going to work. And so responsiveness and bids for connection as a sort of category within that is super, super important and one of the biggest predictors of a satisfying relationship. Now, the love languages is a really nice starting point to give us some language around our preferences. And reading the book, it's not going to do your relationship any harm necessarily. I mean, I've had some, I don't know, when I read it, I underlined a few bits as like, well, that doesn't quite sit with me, especially a lot of the gendered ideas around it. I'm not sure if it's been updated at all recently, but I know there are different versions around like love languages for kids and love languages for families and a whole bunch of stuff. It is a good starting point. It does get you thinking about things, but in itself, it is just one small tool. So don't use it as sort of a, this is it. This has to be the thing. We need to speak the same love language and everything will be fine. One of the big things that this theory or this book misses is what we call love maps. And this is not just how you show love. This is actually around understanding your partner's inner world. It's building that friendship level. It's knowing what is stressing them out, what's happening for them day to day. It's the ongoing updating of their inner world. What are they worried about right now? What are they looking forward to? What's changed for them in the last few days, weeks, months, this year, last year? You know, it's being updated on your partner's inner world. That is so important. And most couples stop updating their love maps after, 3 to 5 years. And they're operating off old information. And I've seen this play out in friends and family and in the couples that I see where someone will do something for their partner and their partner's like, I don't even like that anymore. And they're like, well, you used to like that. It's like, well, yeah, you need to update that. And this happens through conversation. It's through staying connected. You need to be more than just ships in the night to have these conversations, to keep updating those love maps. So just knowing your partner's love language and trying to do one or two things a day or a week based on that is nice and it's a starting point, but it is not enough. Knowing your partner is what makes you good at loving them, not knowing the category. And part of knowing your partner might be knowing parts of their love language and all the different ways that they like to be shown love. But that's different to just taking a quiz and thinking that that's going to be fine. So what to do instead? Let's say you've done the quiz. It can actually be quite fun, and even just talking through some of the questions together can be really illuminating for a relationship. But don't stop there. Keep talking. Ask what they need instead of defaulting to your own preference. And so this can be an example of you might have a Saturday morning free and your instinct is to go and get the car detailed and cleaned. Why not? That would be amazing. You've got a dog and there's hair all over the back seat. So I'm going to go and do this nice thing and get the car detailed and it'll make my partner's week easier. But maybe your partner has felt disconnected from you that week. And for them, the best thing that they can think of to do on a Saturday morning is to spend quality time together, to go get a coffee and go for a walk and update each other on your week. That might be what they need. And so just knowing the simple love language because of the quiz is not going to help you in those moments where you want to do something together. It might be that your preference is to have the car cleaned because that will make your life easier. So you think that that's what they might want. Ask them, talk about these things. Ask them what their preferences are, what the exceptions are. And keep in mind, this is not set and forget. Relationships take ongoing conversation. It is an ongoing dialogue. It's like growing plants or flowers or a tree. You don't just plant it. It takes time to grow. It needs to be watered. It might need to be repotted. But there are things that we just take for granted in a relationship and we think, oh, I've done that once, that should be enough. No, it's not. This is ongoing. Relationships take work. And even if you don't have any idea of their love languages, you can ask them this today, tonight. You can pause this episode. You can pause this right here and ask them now. What would make you feel loved right now? That's a valid question in any relationship. That can be just for this moment. It can be in general, but asking them what would make you feel loved right now. Another thing I'd like you to keep trying or work on is staying curious. Staying curious about what's changed for them, not just what category they are. Staying curious about where they're at, what they need, and don't get defensive about it. So being curious is really, really important. And if you need a little bit more help or guidance, I have my relationship reset course, and there are a whole heap of modules that break things down into simple conversations with questions and prompts that you can have around all sorts of topics, everything from money and finances to how you connect, what you do with friends and family and the people around you that matter. There is a load of really valuable content and you can check that out. There'll be a link to that in the show notes, in the description box. And so I guess I want to wrap up with, look, it's not a bad book. It is easy to digest. You could probably read it in one sitting. The questions themselves can spark some interesting conversation. So let's not completely disregard it. It does open a door of conversation for a lot of couples. The problem is we don't want to just stay in that doorway. We don't want to think that this is a all-inclusive map to love and that's all you need to do. You know, this one thing, this one direction, and that's enough. So the framework is a starting point. And your partner's actual experiences, their current experiences, what's happening for them is what you're aiming for. You can love someone well from a distance, but actually knowing them and staying close to them is what's important. Thanks for listening to this complex life. And if you have a question that you want me to answer, or if you have a topic you want me to cover, please get in touch. There is a link to reach out to me in the show notes.